Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself, Sally.
Yes, John, welcome this morning.
I'm back.
Yeah, you're back. It's always nice to see you in that chair. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. You're listening to me, Sally Martin. Oh, Sally Bailey.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my other name.
It was some time ago, you know.
It was. I just had a time lapse for a second there. Sorry. Sally Bailey in the studio with artist in residence and cultural sounding board, John Baird. Mark, unfortunately, Mark Stewart's, we're going to get him on the phone later, but he isn't in. And we've, of course, got
Mark and I are planning to be in the same room together at some stage.
Oh, that's good. Well, that would be nice. It has been a little bit one-on-one off, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
Yeah, okay, two at once. That would be fun. I could talk less, which would probably suit everybody marvellously.
No.
We've got Brody on the buttons as well this morning, so hopefully the show will go according to plan. Now, I spent a few days last week out in the very remote valley of Combyanbar, which is about as far east as you can get in Victoria, in the middle of the old-growth Erinundra Forest, with friend of the show, painter Sarah Faulkner, whose exhibition Country opened at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery in Collingwood yesterday. I recorded an interview out there with her, and I'm going to play that to you a little bit later.
Excellent.
And what have you got this week, John?
I'm going to talk about the most elegant cruise ship of all time and the dangers of symbolism.
Oh, right. Okay. That's good. Is that to do with the symbolism on the ship? I won't ask
Absolutely.
Any questions.
Absolutely.
Of course. Fantastic. All right. We'll look forward to that. We have no idea what Mark's going to talk to us about. We're just going to ring him up and
I
see what he says.
I think he's still on about failure.
Failure in the future, maybe?
Well, he's sort of interested in the concept of failure and how crucial it is to our behaviour.
Ah, yes, of course it is.
To our reasonable behaviour.
Of course it is. All right, well, that'll be great. And we've also got the penultimate episode of Island King a little later too. Cliff's going to join us. And so while we get the reels lined up with Sarah Faulkner's interview, here's a little bit of canned heat.
Before you do it.
Oh, yes, I do beg your pardon.
I'm just going to get in front of Mark with the failure concept.
Yes.
And there's an American artist called Robert Motherwell.
Yes, who's a big, you're a big fan of, yep. I know. I've seen
and
some of his work.
And he was the true intellectual in American expressionism, a very, very deep thinker. And he said about failure, he said that every successful work of art is little more than a list of one's small failures.
Implying that you could only get to a great work of art through...
Implying that everything fails and that once you get to it, something that's satisfying, it's not a result of you being successful, it's a result of you failing successfully.
Oh, okay. All right, well, that's good. Let's wrap your heads around that, folks. And while you do, here's canned heat to get us in the mood for going up the country. Well, Sarah Faulkner is a Melbourne painter whose early work challenged the status quo as part of the Raw Group from their studio in Brunswick Street. And I know that Swanee, John and myself have at various times found ourselves in events at that wonderful studio. Oh, sorry, yes, John. Yep.
There's quite a barbecue they used to have there.
Oh, we're trying to get John's mic up. Yeah, quite a barbecue they had there, absolutely.
They used to have beautiful barbecues there.
Yeah, they did indeed.
Lots of beer.
Lots of beer and lots of kind of fabulous revelry. It was a really exciting kind of time and to look at the work that came out of there was really, it just heralded a real change in, I think, the way that painters saw themselves, certainly around in Melbourne. Anyway, she's certainly moved on from that, but she has been non-stop painting ever since. Her work is very beautiful. She's rather, her view travels far and wide in terms of distance. She's into the country at the moment, and I spent the weekend with her up in Bottling Plums in Combyanbar, and we had a little chat, and here is the result of that. Well, opening this weekend at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery in Collingwood is the new exhibition by Sarah Faulkner, and I've taken the time to track her down to her residence way, way, way out, about as far east as you can get in Victoria, to a beautiful little valley called Combyanbar. and to talk about the exhibition that's just coming up, aptly named Country. I think we're sitting in a beautiful, beautiful spot to be talking about this. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for talking to us on Arts About.
Morning, Sal. Nice to be here with you. Nice to have you here.
Yes, what an incredible weekend we've had. We've actually been following an extremely country pursuit, haven't we?
Yeah, Country Women's Association to the T. Bottling and making jams.
Yeah, you've never pickling. Seen so many plums on trees as we have over this last weekend. I'm here now actually really to talk about this fantastic new exhibition that's, I think as we go to air, it will have opened up yesterday.
That's correct, on Saturday.
Called Country.
Called Country.
Are you a country girl at heart, do you think?
I think I am at heart. I think deep down my heart is in the country, not the city, especially now after living so long in the city. I think I've about had it with the city. But yeah. Throughout my life I've spent a lot of time in the country and all over the country really, all over Australia, and I just resonate with the quietness and nature, and I find it really inspiring for my work too, all the big open spaces and, you know, different landforms and, you know, what's going on in country life. And so this show really shows pictures of instances in the country which have affected me.
Yeah. Are they all about... Are they all recent paintings, or are they about your most recent observations, or are they?
Yeah, varying? Most of them are. At this point, we haven't. We haven't actually hung, but pretty well all of them are from 2015, 16, and 17. So for me, that's recent in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
There is one big one from, I think, 2005, one of my favourites, but I'm not sure if that will get hung. It's a big seascape from down at Bushrangers Bay, which you'd know, so part of the world.
Yeah, that's very close to where we live. It's interesting to me, looking at your work, that there's a great variation between really broad landscapes with great depth in them, and then intimate details, like, you know, maybe a beautiful little bird or a still life on a table, or, you know, like close up. So there's a great contrast in the way that you look at things.
Yeah, I think I try and look and paint about as much as I can.
You're always painting.
I don't really limit myself to anything, and I actually really love, you know, challenging myself to do something different every time all the time as much as I can. So, you know, and when you look at something, you know, as a human, you're looking with long vision, and then right up close to you. So it's just part of the whole, you know, the whole picture to me.
And what is it that takes your eye? Like, does something gel for you? You look at it and you think, I have to paint that, or is it, you know, that point with the paintbrush and the canvas and you? It's memory. What is it?
Yes, I think it's a bit of I have to paint that. I think that's definitely a good point. There are definitely times when I think I have to paint that, so I'll make sure that I do. Then there's ideas that will swirl around in my head for quite a while, and then that will, you know, and then I'll end up painting that. And they're often really good paintings because I've thought about it. It's just been with me for, you know, a few weeks or months before I actually paint it. And then there's the emotional connection with things that, you know, I sort of feel like I have to get out. For instance, with the burning of the old growth forests in Tasmania. I mean, that really affected me because I know how important those forests are, and once they're gone, we can't get them back. And so, you know, I really wanted to, and I'm from Tasmania originally, and I just really wanted to paint that story.
Mm.
And similarly, I suppose, with the running of the pigs from Combine Bar to Orbis, that was such a great story told by a local here.
Mm.
And visually, you know, that's a wonderful recipe for a painting as far as I'm concerned. And so, yeah, but that's like a local folktale to me. So it resonates with me personally and my situation here, even though I didn't see it. So memory comes into it.
As does storytelling, clearly.
As does storytelling, and the narrative.
Well, we're actually sitting in what is an extraordinarily beautiful little valley right in the middle of the Erindara Forest. Is that it?
Erindara National Park. On the edge of that, yes.
And there's a series of farms in here, and I think some of them have been held in the same hands for a very, very long time. I think the gentleman you're talking about has been here for really long time. And the story is that they used to herd the animals from this little tiny valley through to where? To the markets
In Orbost, I think. It was Orbost. And, you know, this valley's gone through a lot of different agricultural situations. But, yes, I think in the early days they may have grown a lot of corn. So they had a lot of corn and they had pigs. And then to get the pigs to the market, there weren't any trucks or roads. So they had to herd them using, you know, carts. But they herd them keeping them moving by pouring, you know, the corn in front of them so that they keep eating. For how many miles is it? It's like 80 kilometres or more one way. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good story.
It's a fantastic
I don't know story. How many they lost along the way or ate along the way.
Yes, how much corn went missing.
Pigs.
Yes. How on earth? To me, it sounds a bit like herding cats. I can't imagine trying to keep them all on track. Although I suppose the pig is
Pig's
driven
got
by
a
its
one
stomach.
Check mind.
Now, we're sitting in this, as I said, we're sitting in this incredible little valley and looking out from your beautiful veranda to the hills of above Kambayanbar. Do they feature in the exhibition by any chance?
Let me think. There's definitely paintings in the exhibition inspired by Kambayanbar, you know, at least two or three.
It kind of is like having stepped back in time 100 years to come to a place like this and remember what Australia really probably was like a lot more all over the place.
Yes, well, if it wasn't for the, you know, the bitumen road because of the logging, that, you know, it could be completely forgotten. And there's not many places like it, I think, where you have to drive a long way to get here, and then you have to drive through, you know, long foresty roads and even to get to the valley. But it's a unique spot, and there's not that many places so far off the beaten track.
So back to your paintings. You've been a painter all of your life, haven't you?
Hmm.
Yeah.
All the way through.
All the way through. And that's all you've done, isn't it?
That's right. I'm one of those the people that can't you know, do anything else really. Although I have been doing a bit of teaching, and I've always done a bit of teaching. And I have worked with disadvantaged kids too in adventure playgrounds and, different situations.
All involving art, I suspect.
Mainly involving art. Yeah.
You began your life, you've always painted in Melbourne. Well, you began in Melbourne, didn't you?
Began in Melbourne and then did a lot of travelling, you know, in my 20s. And 30s to get inspiration to do different shows about cultures, overseas cultures that I, you know, never experienced before. And I've done a little bit of that since, but having a family and, you know, it's kept me a bit more grounded. I haven't been able to flit off and
have some of those adventures I heard about over the weekend often. I know. But now your very fine eye, after what it must be 4 decades of painting, is turned to the country in which we sit, which is probably becoming more and more centrally focused to everybody as we realise the things that we're losing and the way that life's changing.
Absolutely. And it's something that I think we've all got inside us, that love of nature here and Australian countryside. However, it's very varied too. So there's so many different, you know, variations on country life in Australia, from deserts to, you know, reefs to, it's just huge. So mountains and valleys and rivers and, you know, so it's huge amount of subject matter that one can delve into. Look at all the great landscape painters that Australia's produced, you know, as well, Von Gerhard and Streeton and, you know,
Namajira.
Roberts and Namajira and, you know, and so many great paintings still being painted about Australian landscape. So it is infinite, which is lovely.
It is.
You could work on country for the rest of your life. In fact, I was thinking when I retire up here, I might just do sky paintings because the sky is so big and wonderful here, and it's so, oh my God, it just, It's just a whole another language of its own, the skies up here. So,
well, that could be the next title for the next exhibition.
That's right.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah's exhibition titled Country is on at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery, which is in Collingwood, and it runs between the 4th to the 26th of March. It's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So thanks for talking about us today.
Fantastic. Thanks, Sarah.
See you, Sarah.
Yeah, see you soon.
I think, with any luck, we've got Mark on the phone next.
So, you ready for me?
We are ready for you. Now, what are you going to be giving us today, Mark?
Well, a couple of things.
Yes.
We're going to start around 9000 BC.
Oh, that's a long way back.
That is, with the Yama, Yami in plural. These were people from the steppes, and they domesticated the horse. They were the first people to domesticate horses.
Yes.
They mastered equitation and they acquired a new and fast mobility.
Where are we talking? Which continent?
The steppes, in Russian steppes.
The Russian. Okay.
Yeah, that's where they started.
Mm-hmm.
So they mastered equitation and they were able to get around pretty fast. They were also one of the four founding tribes of modern Europe and the first big dealers of cannabis. Between 5,500 BC and 4,300 BC.
Of cannabis?
Yes.
Really?
There's more to this, yes. They also diffused their Indo-European language through what we now call the Silk Route, and they were very generous with their genes, with many a willing farmer's daughter.
Oh, I see.
Who could resist the dashing horseman with a bag of dope.
Indeed.
Indeed, yeah, exactly. Indeed. That goes without question.
Who comes from the yummy.
It comes from the yummy, or the yama, singular. But anyway, this is from a study by the University of Berlin and an article from the magazine Vegetation History and Archaeobotany. They found from 11,500 BC the use of cannabis in Japan, China, and Eastern Europe. But consummation exploded around 7,000 BC with the transcontinental commerce. Cannabis had a high value and multiple uses in the kitchen. Hash brown, is anyone? For medicine, fabrication of rope and rugs, and for ceremonies, orgies, and peace pipes.
So would this be true then that cannabis actually came from Russia?
Well, they don't really say that. I think it might have been they were cultivating it,
right?
And probably had a really good strain of cannabis, and so they were able to. You know, people were looking for ways of, you know, since time began, ways of getting into another state.
I would have thought originally from northern India.
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked into that. So, you know, I was looking into this magazine called. Vegetation history, which was quite interesting, but it didn't really go into the. I do know that the Celts in the Gauls in France would they'd trade their wife for a litre of wine with the Romans.
Oh, they had no idea.
But yeah, I know, absolutely. I mean, maybe the wives are doing it for their husbands. Anyway, that's one little article that I thought might be interesting to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is this the concept of failure. Which I wanted to go into.
Yes.
And I looked into the etymology of it. It comes from old French, Anglo-Norman, meaning failli, which is a non-occurrent and cessation of supply, is the original meaning. And so in modern French, when they say il a failli, meaning it means he or she tried but didn't succeed.
Right.
So the concept of failure in a physical sense is one of where you come out of yourself. You move ahead, and if you don't arrive, fall back into yourself to reflect and to understand. Even if you do arrive, it still feels like a failure sometimes, that there's always more. Then we die, which in itself is a failure, some would say.
It's a living failure.
Yeah. So Socrates' lovely phrase, the more I know, the less I know, is constant, like the word still, not moving but continuing. Now, this is all a little bit, I'm actually failing to get across what I mean. So I'm going to talk about a sculpture of Michelangelo in the Louvre, down in the Susso, which it's called the Dying Slave, which you might know. The Dying Slave is a young, handsome figure, just dead, it seems, hanging there, an extraordinary subtraction. But if you look at the back, the upper right-hand shoulder isn't there. He ran out of stone. He failed.
Mm-hmm.
As has often been said of Michelangelo, his unfinished work is a sign of his discontent. But when you follow the chisel lines, almost it's almost as if you are part of his process and his dust. Okay? So that's Michelangelo and his failure, which he's managed. You're very quiet there, John.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all of that. In fact, I was thinking, I do know the sculpture you're talking about, and the drapedness of it always reminded me of a sculpture of yours, as a matter of fact, which was
that's very kind of you,
the John, Sleeping Sword. Remember the Sleeping Sword?
Yes, there was the Sleeping Sword.
It's also slightly encouraging to think that Michelangelo failed at something. I mean, you know,
we all fail. You can't not fail.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess that is the thing, is that to realise that we all...
Yeah, the meaning of the word, that you tried but didn't succeed, is the, that's the idea. And, we could go on, in a lot of cases, things have been created because someone, either fell out of love or felt like they were, not up to scratch. There's many examples of that. But I just want to move on. We're still in France at the Louvre.
Yeah.
Next door, there is where the sculpture is, there is a wonderful square, large square in the Louvre called the Cour Carré, which is a square court or courtyard, all cobblestone, very useful in riots, with a central circular fountain. Now, this square, until the late 19th century, was filled with apartments housing sculptors, widows, and children, of which there were legion. Down the road, there is the Rue de l'Université, now an exclusive, very expensive street on the left bank in the 7th arrondissement, which was, until the late 19th century, also filled with sculptor studios, bronze foundries, stonemasons and plasterers all along the street. You can just imagine the dust and the noise. Now, that's got nothing to do with failure. What I want to talk about now is the French phrase, when they're looking at a painting or a sculpture or food, they say, ce n'est pas terrible, which normally they just say pas terrible, which means it's not even terrible, which I think is just the most cutting and most wonderful way to say something's not good.
Not even terrible, yeah, that's pretty good actually, isn't it? I'm going to start using that one. That's not even terrible.
Yeah. And then just to move on to the French use of masculine and feminine, do you know that in French a vagina is masculine, un vagin, and that a penis is feminine?
No.
Yes.
Those crazy French,
exactly. They are. Yeah.
And of course, we all know le petit mot, the orgasm.
Yes, le petit mot, of course.
Another failure, if you like.
Oh,
it's just never enough.
Hey, listen, we're going to have to stop you in a second with all of these failures. And ponder that a little while. I think this sort of French lesson we're getting in philosophy is rather wonderful. Well, it's etymology or...
Etymology, yeah. Well, just
size...
And there's just one last
semiotics,
one.
Semiotics, yes.
The holes in the train station, like the Gare de Lyon or the Gare du Nord, the central hall is called the Salle de Pas Perdu, which is the hall of the lost steps.
Of the lost what?
Steps.
Oh,
that's civic poetry for you.
Yes, civic poetry. Now, there's a genre I hadn't considered. Hey, thank you so much for talking to us today, Mark. I look forward to getting you back into the same room as John next week.
Okay.
See you soon.
And now it's time for John On.
Straight into it, and my head full of the running of the pigs and the Mark's various kind of...
Le petit mot?
Journeys into failure. I think it's probably harder to define success than it is to define failure.
Yeah, probably it is actually, because it's a bit open-ended, isn't it?
Well, it's hard to imagine how anyone could really succeed.
Yeah. Well, there's always... Well, we're in a real world, aren't we? So things are not cut and dry.
And in terms of success or failure, then I want to talk about the Queen Elizabeth, which was a ship built by the English in the 1930s. And it was, I think, the most beautiful ship ever built, but it had a terrible history. It was never a fortunate ship. It was a very unfortunate ship. And it was built to do the Atlantic crossing between Europe and America. And, Sally, crime.
That is a phone crime. I do apologise, listeners.
Was built to make the journey across the Atlantic between Europe and America, but it was launched just in time to be painted grey and used as a troop ship in the Second World War. So it was launched in 1941 and became a troop ship, and was very handy as a troop ship because it had these massive speeds that it could achieve, like beyond 30 knots, and the German U-boats couldn't keep up with it.
As well as the sort of the morale that a fabulous kitchen would probably involve as well.
Well, if they refitted it, I'm not sure how. I'm not sure they were, the soldiers were sitting around drinking champagne and eating caviar like you did. But a beautiful thing regardless, and full of grace and speed and possibilities. And after the war, her sister ship, the Queen Mary, this really stunned me to learn this, but the Queen Mary, after the Second World War, spent 4 years transporting American brides from Europe to America, women that American soldiers had married in Europe.
You're kidding. 4 years worth of them.
4 years to get them all over there.
That is a lot of wives.
Yeah, well, they were all young men, I suppose, and, you know, there was a lot of single women in Europe.
Good grief, that is extraordinary.
Yep. Meanwhile, the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth are going either way across the Atlantic. Everybody likes to travel that way. It didn't take that long.
I'd have loved it.
Yeah, and very relaxing and very exciting. Then the jetliner arrived and people started flying instead. And it ruined the business of shipping, of passenger shipping. And the owners, the Cunard Line, didn't really know what to do with these ships. So the Queen Mary became a hotel in California, permanently moored hotel in California. The Queen Elizabeth went down to Florida to try and do the same thing, but the weather pretty well stuffed it.
Right.
So the owners looked around for buyers for it, and after a bit of mucking around, they eventually sold it to a guy called Mr. Tung, who was Chinese, Hong Kong Chinese, and he bought it and took it to Hong Kong, where he moored it in the harbour and wanted to turn it into a university, a floating university, which is a kind of nice idea.
It is a nice idea.
But he made a big mistake, which is where the symbolism comes into it, because he engraved lotus flowers on the funnels.
Yes.
And not sure why he decided to do that, but the lotus flower to the communist regime was a symbol of Taiwan. And they didn't like it.
No, they don't like the Taiwanese, do they?
And
the independence of the
about
Taiwanese.
Eight fires all simultaneously burst out on the Queen Elizabeth, and they couldn't stop the flames, they couldn't stop the fires, and she had so much water poured onto her in an effort to stop the flames that listed to one side and sank in Hong Kong Harbour.
Wow!
Which is not a noble end to a beautiful ship.
No. I wonder if its remains still there, or would it have been?
Well, as it turns out,
good question, Sally.
Yeah. It was sunk in very shallow water, and half of it was sticking up out of the water. And they salvaged what they could off the bit that was sticking out of the water, essentially, and a lot of stuff from like the more valuable things from under the waterline. And it was still there. I went to Hong Kong a lot in the early 1980s.
Did you?
Yeah.
What were you doing over there?
Well, that's completely...
It's another story, Sally.
And it was still there then. You'd fly over it. And you could see it in the water there. Since then, it's had land claiming built over the top of it and wharves built over the other end of it. And so it's kind of under things at the moment.
Wow.
But one of the things they got off it was a lot of bronze... And all the bronze work. Some of this bronze work was sold to Parker Pens. And Will would be interested
Will
in this.
And Swanee would like to know this.
There is a Parker Pen out there, a collector's pen.
That is made out of the Queen Elizabeth.
Made out of the Queen Elizabeth bronze. And it has engraved on the side of it Parker and QE and 1972.
Are you listening, Swanee? Yeah. Will?
made out of the bronze. And Will's NASA pen, which I know works upside down and in a
actually,
vacuum.
Actually, I have to admit, it is my Fisher Space Pen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which works in a vacuum or upside down. And I was wondering whether or not the Queen Elizabeth Parker would work underwater.
Yes. Ironically, probably not. Fantastic, John. That's really terrific. Thank you. Hey, next up we have Island King, an Australasian adventure, the penultimate, episode 12, Australia Bound.
Island King, an Australasian adventure starring Andrew Curry and Kate Jenkinson. Death in the Pacific, episode 12, The Road to Truth. Freshly arrived in Melbourne, Australia, Will and Gabby get their bearings and sign up for the taxi ride of their lives.
Somebody had better know where Portsea is.
Oh, right around the bay, mate. About 60, 65 mile.
Really? Jeez, is there a train, a ferry?
A train, about half the way. It'll get you to Mornington.
Oh, that's no good.
Let's get a bath and worry about this later.
How else could we get to Portsea?
Taxi, mate.
Crikey, that'd cost a pretty penny, you think?
Only one way to find out, mate. Frank Porter, Porter Limousines.
Well, that's a spot of luck.
How much?
15 quid.
Okie dokie.
Oh, now wait a minute, Gabby. That sounds pretty steep.
Suit yourself, mate. Juice is 4.5 bob a gallon. This isn't a quick trip over to Stepney.
What do you know about Stepney?
I drank at the Half Moon there during the war. I know it's where Bombardier Billy Wells was born.
A great boxer.
A great man.
14 title defences. He came back and beat Joe Beckett.
The Olympia. Kensington. 1920.
You know he's the gong man in the J. Arthur Rank films.
Oh, of course.
Are we talking about boxing or are we getting out of this heat?
Right, yeah, we should go then.
The chariot's just round the corner.
The bags, Frank?
I don't carry bags.
Oh, he doesn't carry bags.
I like him.
You would.
What do you think?
Ooh la la!
Oh, blow me down, it's an Armstrong Siddeley.
1957 Sapphire 346. 3400 cc's of get you anywhere you want to go.
A friend back in London had a 45 Hurricane drophead.
Oh, the open coupe. Very showy.
Yeah, that's our Peggy.
Peggy?
Right, Frank, we should be getting going, I think.
Oh, right.
So I'll get the door, shall I, Frank?
I still need a bath.
I'm sure they have baths in Portsea, love.
Yeah, one or two.
Air conditioning's the ticket, Frank.
You bet. Beats the window winders on an FC Holden.
Forgive me for asking, old boy, but is the Siddeley yours?
Lock, stock and barrel.
Not your run-of-the-mill taxi, you'd have to say.
Did you rob it, Frank?
Gabby.
I was a general's driver during the war. They were Chevys then, and when it was over, we still, worked together. I still drove him round.
Oh, chauffeur?
Well, not exactly.
A bodyguard?
He died this year, rather suddenly. And, I was out of a job. He left me the car. Bloke's got to make a living.
Certainly right there. Gabby, you will be repaid every penny as soon as this mess is cleared up.
It's Ralph's money. He could have made all this trouble for you. He will owe you.
Possibly. It's probably a good time to work out how we're going to manage this. I mean, what if he did kill Winky? Do we give him up and turn our backs? Perhaps he lost control in a fit of jealousy. Ralph is a good friend to you and to me.
It's true.
And it does seem that Winky was a bit of a mongrel.
Seem? He was all over me. He was starting to scare me.
Yeah, okay. But did he deserve to die?
Here you go, folks. Portsea. Reckon the pub's the best place to start.
Hell of a pub.
Nothing but the best for you blue bloods.
Oh, some fancy houses, Frank. I'm changing my mind about Cow Paddock Australian.
Looks like Cambridge. More England than England. Except for that ripper of a bay.
The richest postcode in the country, mate. The Sidley fits right in. Expect to see a roller or two as well.
And a bathtub or two. Oh, look at the blue, blue water. We're staying here. You too, Frank.
Ooh, you won't hear me complain.
Gabby, this isn't exactly a holiday.
What is it you're exactly doing here?
Long story, Frank, but it'd be good if you stuck around. Buy your drink?
I've got the first shelf.
The pub's a great idea, Frank. Saturday afternoon. Looks like the whole town's here.
What'll it be, love?
Three pots of Vic, thanks.
Vic?
The national drink.
A nice cold beer.
Well earned, I'd say. It's been a long haul.
Six bob, thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Prost. Whew. It makes your eyes water, don't it?
Miss?
Yes, love?
We're looking for someone who moved here pretty recently. German accent, sandy hair.
Ralphie?
Yes, Ralph.
4:30. If he's not here, he'll be over at the cricket.
Bingo.
You could try the lounge too. He likes to look out the window.
Will do. Thanks.
Oh, this is getting exciting. I might need another beer.
Come on.
I'll wait here. Keep me eye on the door.
I think I need to go to the loo. Is that how you say it? The loo?
Look. Hello, Winky.
Well, well, well. What in heaven's name is a headless dead man doing sipping gin in a seaside hotel? Be sure to tune into the next exciting episode of Island King! Island King is written by Peter Swan and starred Andrew Curry, Kate Jenkinson, Doug Tremlett and Nick Farnell, with Sally Bellew and Peter Swan in supporting roles. Sound production by Steve Myers. Tune in each day to Drive at 5:05 for the next exciting episode!
Clan Elder has just made it into the studio, actor, blogger, writer, and celebrated senior of the group.
And man who's still alive.
And a man who's still alive, Cliff Ellen. Good morning,
just,
Cliff.
Just still alive.
Uh-huh.
Although I am going up to Melbourne today, just in case you're asking me what I'm doing today.
Oh, yes, I was going to do that, but that was later on.
Between 2 and 4 p.m., they've got that motherhood is overrated. Now, I'd have to look at this, because as you know, I'm a feminist.
Oh. No, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's in recognition of the 2017 International Women's Day, ABC Radio
week.
Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
in partnership with Federation Square. It's today, starting a galaxy of the finest female talent in a heady collision of heart and humour with Julia Zemiro, as you know, I love her.
Yes.
Wendy Harmer, Elaine Crombie and Mary Kustos, who played that strange Greek role, hosted by Libby Gore. So more or less a big group of people that...
Gorgeous women.
Well, they are. They're women.
Yeah, they are.
Right.
They're comics, aren't they?
Yeah, they're sharp and they're funny and they've got competitive minds.
Right.
And that's what will make it a good 2 hours entertainment.
Uh-huh. Where's that on at?
4:00. Today at Deakin Edge
right.
at Federation Square.
Okay.
That's today.
Today, that's Sunday, today, yes.
Just in case you said, what am I doing today? John.
Cliff.
Johannes Vermeer.
Yeah.
There's something on him on television
mm-hmm.
about a realist painter. He paints so well that you think it's a photograph.
Think it's a photograph. Think that you're looking at the person themselves or the room itself.
It's just that, well, I got somebody to paint my wife about 5 years ago, and
it wasn't Vermeer.
It charged me $1,000. Everybody thinks it's a photo.
Oh, really?
It's perfect, but it's a painting.
Yeah.
So they do it today too.
Vermeer is very interesting. He only ever made 22 paintings. 22 was his entire output.
That is incredible. I did not know that.
Mm.
Wow. I didn't watch it all.
That's why you never see them in the marketplace. It's never a Vermeer.
Well, they do have a theme park, a Vermeer theme park. And, in fact, Dr. Gabe went there on her honeymoon.
Really?
Yes, we must get her in to talk about that.
A Vermeer theme park.
A theme park. Can you believe that? Somewhere in Brussels.
You finished a private discussion, you two?
Huh? Oh, you well, haven't finished. Sorry, Cliff, it's Cliff's bit. Do beg
where
your pardon.
Vermeer would enter your world is the film The Girl with the Pearl Earring.
Oh, right.
Which was about a Vermeer painting.
Right. I can't recall it, but still, I would have seen it.
It was beautiful.
Vague something. Beautifully in the back of my mind. John by Annie Baker.
Oh, yeah.
Julia Bakes withdrawn as Melita Jurisic during the part now. And that's a long play. It's got two intervals, 3 hours. Mm-hmm. It's about Jenny and Elias arriving late one evening at some bed and breakfast in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and all sorts of things go on. But look, it looks like a good story. If you want to know what it's all about, look it up.
Where's that on?
Well, it's on at the MTC.
Yeah, okay. One of those theatres then.
It's a good cast, that's all. I'm just trying to see who's in the play. But no,
it's Helen Mirren, you know.
It's directed by Sarah Goods. Helen who?
I don't know. It's a Helen someone in it, isn't it?
It won't be Helen Mirren.
Why?
Because she's in London.
Oh.
She's unlikely to be an MTC
English. That's, she's the English Helen. Yeah. Helen Morse?
Helen Morse is the... Cliff loves Helen Morse.
Mm. I'm not sure if she's in it. I thought she's in the Faith Hill. No, Helen Morse is probably in it.
Yeah, okay. We better have a look.
I haven't looked at my notes because I'm all over the place, as usual, due to the fact that I'm so old. The other one coming up is the Faith Healer. And that, well, that opens on the 4th of March, which was, what, yesterday.
Is that a Colin Friels and
yeah,
somebody?
Yeah, Brian Friel wrote it, directed by Judy Davis.
That's right.
And, big, big reviews in Sydney, you know. And what is it? Who's in that one? Let me see.
Well, I thought it was Colin Friels. Yeah, yeah.
Pip Miller, Alison White. She's fantastic.
Alison, yes, you know, I know you like
Paul
her.
Paul Blackwell, he's fantastic too. But no, I think Helen Morse. Helen, is she in that?
No, I don't think she is. I think John threw in a furphy.
Yeah, well, it's the theatre. I don't know a lot about it.
Well, maybe it's the other one. There's Mark Colvin's Kidney. That's Belvoir 1-2 to the 2nd of April. I think that's coming down here. And that's got a big cast also. John Howard's in it, Peter Carroll and Sarah Pierce, Chris Stollery and Helen Thompson.
What's that one called? There's the Helen for you, John.
That's Mark Colvin's Kidney. No, it's a fair income story. Mary Ellen Fear, a successful Australian business consultant in London, and she was accused by Al McPherson as an alcoholic and betraying the secrets of her clients to the press. So she copped it, but it came out later that they'd been, you know, taping her phone, bugging her phone.
Ah.
And it appears she was innocent and she got up. She got this connection with Mark Colvin, who's an ABC reporter, and she'd been to court, but unfortunately the court case went against her. They've made a play out of it, and it's looking good. But
it's a very modern theme, of course, isn't it? Whose chair's squeaking? It's mine.
Now, one of those three plays, Helen Morse is in.
One of them.
I've forgotten which one.
Let's find out for next week.
Well, I've got a page of notes here, and I didn't underline the great Helen Morse, and I'm sure she's starring in it. Right?
Oh, okay. So she's in a play. Keep your eyes out, everybody. Helen Morse is in a play.
Are you running out of time?
We've got a couple of minutes. What have
you want a book review?
Give us a book review.
Okay, this book is How to Stop Overthinking and Come Alive.
Oh.
It's out now.
It's a self-help
book,
is it?
It's by Ali Walker. We believe we can think ourselves happy, but in reality, the only way to experience true happiness is to become self-aware. The way we experience emotions remains a constant throughout our lives, and it is by acknowledging this and the different elements of our inner selves that we can experience genuine contentment. Drawing on Ali's research in psychology, this is, you've got the four things you've got to master: feel, honour all emotions, think, choose positive thoughts, sense, trust the message of your body, act, go with the flow of life and love. Includes case studies. I must buy that book.
I was going to say, have you actually read that one, Cliff?
No, but I've heard a review of it.
Yeah,
on the radio.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You know. It sounded good, did it?
Well, I wouldn't read that in a fit.
Neither would I.
It sounded to me like, you know, somebody that's majored in psychology and they've written a book.
Yeah, but if you start listing the criteria for happiness and then telling people how to go about achieving it, you're going to get the complete opposite result, I would have thought.
Oh, yeah, but psychology's big these days, isn't it?
Oh, it yeah. break everything down.
Show me a family that hasn't got a psychologist in it.
Yeah, you've got a psychologist of her son, haven't you?
Oh, I've got about three others too.
Oh, yeah, my goodness me. Hey,
and my son's a psychiatrist.
Do we have time for a song? We don't even have time for Cliff's song this week. Sorry, Cliff, we've run out of time.
Oh, it's all right. I'll find out what happened to Helen next week. If you're listening, Helen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Goodbye.
Hey,
lady.
Goodbye, Cliff.
Goodbye, John.
Nice
see you later, Cliff, and let's hope when we find out what Helen's in...
Yeah, we'll let our listeners know, shall
that
we?
It's a genre we approve of.
I know. Genre's a shot, isn't it?
Hey, it's time for the news, you two. High-risk dressing critical fashion still on at RMIT Design Hub, running through until the 18th of March.
As is Steve Baird's exhibition at Brightspace.
Of course, friend of the show, Steve Baird, yes. And brother of John.
You'd be running out of time, so get down there quickly.
Yes, that's right, Brightspace. Sarah Faulkner's exhibition, Country, opened yesterday at Nicholas Thompson's Gallery, 4th to the 26th of March. Have a look at their website for details. I'll put a link on our Facebook page.
I reckon she'd master that Gippsland landscape thing pretty well.
Oh, yes.
She's a good painter.
She's a gorgeous painter.
A Woman's Place is a celebration of women living on the Mornington Peninsula.
Yes, they've got things on that have been all over this weekend. I think tonight they've got the film Embrace playing down at SPAC. So if you haven't found out about it already, have a look on the website. Google A Woman's Place in Rosebud. And MPRG, Text a Queen, Between You and Me, still on. Go and have a look at that. And the new exhibition at McClellan Gallery, Dormitorium, an interactive sculptural project by Melbourne-based architect Matthew Bird, examining the bedroom. You should go and have a look at that. Have a bit of a lie down. Feel like a bit of a lie
Matthew
down.
Matthew Bird, eh?
If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up on the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the future. The show is also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12, and you can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday, and remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
We know what we like.
Mm.
Just thought I'd do that quite normally.
Yeah, you did. It was quite normal.
See you later, Cliff.
See
Thank you,
later.
Brody, the man Helen behind the curtain.
At the MTC.